Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. Pennsylvania, we'd like to bring in our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Good morning, Aaron. How are we doing today? It's a good hot summer afternoon, or early morning, whatever you want to say, wherever you are in the world. But, got a good show lined up, and we got a few things to talk about, some numbers and other places around the world having some fights this evening.
Yeah. Hey, look, first of all, you know, a boxing guy, Tom Peters out there in California, who's in the veterans house, he's in there recovering. He's a true boxing guy, a friend of the National Boxing Hall of Fame. He was with Harold Smith back when Harold Smith was promoting during the 70s. He's a real boxing guy, and we want to send our prayers and blessings out to him that he gets out of the hospital and he's recovering from his sickness or illness. So our prayers go out to him and his family.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, the coronavirus is still wreaking havoc around the world. You know, we're over 12.5 million cases worldwide. We have over 500,000 dead, about 55,000, 561,000. And, you know, one other note you look at it, you see the active cases, you know, United States is accounting for like 36% of all the active cases. So it's still something to worry about. And we did just hear this week about the fall schedule, the first cancellations we've heard now for fall sports. The Ivy League announced this week that they have canceled all fall sports, which means no fall football for the Ivy League, which means like the old Yale-Princeton game, which was the first football game ever played, they won't be playing this year. So, you know, it's still happening, and there you go. No Ivy League football. We'll see where that goes from there as far as other smaller schools and even the high schools and other minor programs.
Yeah, it's the reality of this thing is real, and we should, like we say in boxing, protect yourself at all times, you know, as we get out. And as people get out, you know, the hot spots, there's plenty of them, you know, that are around. And from California, Florida, Texas, you know, in other parts of the country. So we have to, as things loosen up here, we have to continue to protect ourselves and be aware of the information, the proper information that's constantly changing as we see in the numbers. So,
right. And I just want to mention one other thing, too, about masks. You have to wear the mask the whole way. It doesn't count if you just cover your mouth. So many times I'm seeing people without their nose covered, and that's a big part of it. You touch something, you touch your nose. You know, you got the virus. So wear your mask, but wear it properly.
Yeah, and keep washing your hands.
Exactly.
That's an important thing too. You have to wash your hands. But look, Bob, you know, as this coronavirus goes on, boxing is still trying to get up on the scenes. We got some stuff happening around the world, and we had some fights that ESPN with Top Rank had put on too, and I believe there was a little shakeup with some bouts too. If you can take us on that magic carpet ride around the world and tell us what's going on during these difficult times.
Yeah, we'll start with a couple of those numbers. Just want to mention from last Thursday, the Pedraza-Lapierre fight actually had the best numbers ESPN had since the Stevenson fight, which kicked everything off. They peaked at 448,000. And on Tuesday this past week for the Zepeda-Castaneda fight, that peaked at 388,000. I do not have numbers, though, for the fight the other night, the Takam Forest heavyweight fight, which, of course, was going to be Jarrell Miller and that thing, too. But we'll go around the world, then we'll talk a little bit about something that the Zone is doing, too. But we'll begin in the South Pacific at the ABA Stadium in coronavirus-free Auckland, New Zealand, with unbeaten super middleweight Andres Mikhailovich. He's 11-0, six knockouts, stepping in with Dylan Wright in a six-round headliner Also in Toowoomba, Queensland, Australia. That'll be on epicenter.tv in Australia. It's Steve Spark, 9-1, and Michael Whitehead, 7-3-1, fighting for the IBF Australasian Super Lightweight Championship. And now on to Europe, and Ustid Nadlabem in Czech Republic, where the main event is the Fanare Natizri versus Veronica Andreskova, female super bantam bout. Dusseldorf, Germany, tops a big card with the super welterweight clash between Ahmed El Moussaei, 32-3-1, 7 KOs, and Sergej Vatsal, 14-4-1, 7 KOs. On now to Riva Latvia. They end their night with the Arturs Gorlov, 7-1, versus Ferenc Urban, 7-0, cruiserweight clash. And two scheduled shows in the USA tonight. First, in Hannibal, Missouri, it's Trey Labdy and Kindale Prather meeting up in the welterweight finale there. While CBS Sports will be in Biloxi, Mississippi, for Deshaun Webster, he's 12-3-2, 6 KOs, versus Samuel Clarkson, 22-6, 15 knockouts. That's a cruiserweight showdown there. And the middleweight meeting of Vladimir Hernandez, 10-4, versus Aaron Coley, 16-2-1. Also on the card is the super featherweight battle of Xavier Wilson, 11-1-1, versus the 11-0 Jeremy Hill. The bubble in Las Vegas next Tuesday on ESPN is Jermell Herring, 21-2, 10 knockouts, defending his WBO World Super Featherweight crown against challenger Jonathan Okendo, 31-6, 19 KOs. Also, Michaela Mayer, 12-0, crosses the ropes with the 17-4-2 Helen Joseph in a women's super featherweight fight originally scheduled for last month. And it was Michaela Mayer who had tested positive back on June 7th of the coronavirus, and she's okay. She's got a clean bill of health, so that fight is on for next week on ESPN. Also, Thursday night's bubble show will end with the lightweights Alexis Del Bosque, 17-5, 9 KOs, and Cesar Allen Valenzuela, 15-6-1, squaring off. So we have a few countries there. You see 2, 4, 6, 7 of them. And, you know, nothing in South America or any of these other hot spots. Mexico, they, again, had shows last week, but those contests, once again, were listed as NCs, no contests, because they were not sanctioned, so nothing going on in Mexico. I don't know, for the foreseeable future, actually, too, looking ahead, I couldn't really see too much happening. But slowly but surely, there are some people who are doing the right thing and putting on fights. And, you know, I just want to say, too, so far, you know, out there in Las Vegas, the bubble is definitely working. You know, they're weeding out people who have tested positive, and so far so good. You know, it's been going for a while, and all reports seem to be okay.
Yeah, Bob, didn't in England, wasn't there some bouts with Eddie Hearns last night, I believe?
There were some fights last night. There were, exactly. We had Brad Foster and James Beach Jr. They were fighting for a couple of the British titles. And Foster won, I know that, and so did Hamza Shiraz. He was actually fighting for a WBO European super welterweight belt against Paul Keane. So, yeah, they went on into BT Studio, sports studios, not the Matchroom studio either, that they're going to be fighting August. Actually, found out, too, that Katie Taylor and Delphine Persoon fight number 2. The rematch is now on for that undercard of the White-Povetkin fight, which will be August 22nd. That's going to be in that Matchroom studio, basically the backyard of Matchroom studio. So that finalized this week as far as that rematch. But, I didn't see any numbers, of course, like we're saying, as far as these, but they did go off last night, apparently without a hitch, and Foster won, and so did Shiraz.
Yeah, and also, you know, there's reports coming out about the zone. It looks
right.
Like they're having some looks like financial situation. They're looking for some type of capital, and they're doing something with they're changing their platform online a little bit.
What's happening is they had a shakeup at the top this week. They have a new chief executive, an acting chief executive. His name's James Rushton. He's replacing Steve Denyer, who had been there since the beginning. And what they're also doing this week, they're offering a free beta version test. Don't really know what the beta is, but it's a new platform that we're speaking of. And they're going to do that for their summer shows, which start on Friday the 24th of this month. But it's going to be free. And the thing is that they're saying it's targeting the new territory and markets. So any place like the United States where the zone is already in, it's not going to be affected. But they're trying to, again, like you said, try to open up the markets, trying to raise some money And they're saying it's going to be a first-come, first-served basis, but they're also not giving any kind of a number, saying, oh, you know, there's 10,000 or 5,000. So it's pretty much you have to go to the zone, and you can sign up for it if you're out of the United States or any of these other countries. But they're trying to shake things up, and they did shake up their upper management too. So, we know that their troubles have been well documented over the past few months of the fact that they were even saying they didn't even want to pay the rights and without the shows, and so it's going to work itself out eventually. But they're hanging in there. But that's the news. There's going to be a new beta version of. But as far as the price structure, I don't know how long this free beta test is going to last. But that's the deal.
Yeah, and with stuff like this happening with the streaming platform, they're going to a different style that will open it up for more people, I believe, to prescribe. I think they changed their prescriber base, your sign-up fee. I think they lowered it.
I think they went back to a monthly thing now. Yeah, they went back to a monthly. I don't have the price here in front of me, but before, you know, they were just doing it as a yearly thing, and they had a monthly thing at first and all that. So I believe just the way things are right now, they're just trying to raise the revenue, so they're taking monthly subscriptions again. I believe it's back at $9.99, yeah.
You know, with this pandemic happening around the world, and them just being a young streaming platform with not a lot of programming in the can, where people want to continue to look at them, you know, a lot of reruns over. People get tired looking at it at the same old thing over and over again. I think that hurt them, and they didn't go seek for people who had programming to stream it through their service and pay for it. So, but don't forget Anthony Joshua and Matchroom Boxing. I mean, the money that they're paying them, you know, they gave Matchroom Boxing $1 billion for boxing. That's a heavy burden to carry. And then along with the Anthony Joshua, and then don't forget Canelo Alvarez. He's heavily in their pocket. It's really something, and it's based on signing people up for those prescriptions to subscribe to their channel and their platform. And when that don't happen, the cash don't come in, man. As a new company, you know, I don't believe they're 3 years out of the box yet, and that's the danger part of it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's a key time right now for any business, you know, after you get up and running, how are you 2-3 years down the road, right? Definitely part of the game.
And with those heavy contracts that they sign with those fighters, man, oh, man, oh, man, that's it's tough to deliver. So we always say content is king, and if you can deliver the content, then you're king. And that's what, you know, they can say whatever they want about Don King, and Don King worked hard with Seth Abraham during those early HBO days in the 70s, and boy, did they bring boxing and build HBO what they are today. And when Don King left, and it was on a downcline ever since, they can say Don King works day and night, and he brings the best. His numbers of pay-per-view are second to none, and all the championship fights and stars that he made with Showtime. And then when that didn't work out good for HBO with him, with Mike Tyson, he left and went to Showtime, and then he built Showtime up with boxing, you know, with those great pay-per-views with the Julio Cesar Chavez, the Mike Tysons, the Trinidads, the Frankie Randalls. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it built Showtime up with boxing to where it is today. So, man, oh, man, it shows how bright and talented Don King was with pay-per-view and how he promoted boxing and to build it up and to keep it up all the times that he was with doing business with them guys. But now, Matchroom Boxing sees how difficult it is to keep, you know, those championship fights are flowing in the pay-per-views. You know, if you don't have pay-per-views, that money, big money stream coming in, it's going to fold out because that's what it's counted upon, you know, Bob. So we gotta look at these things and see how it's going to unfold. You know, with this pandemic, you know, Anthony Joshua was supposed to fight for them. And then, you know, Tyson Fury and Dante Wilder still has a fight that's glooming in the background that they were supposed to be fighting in the rematch. And, you know, then they tried to make the Anthony Joshua and Fury fight and finds out is that they got to go back to Wilder because Wilder's contract is solid and they couldn't get him to step aside. So, you know, it's tough right now.
But, and Joshua and Pula, their schedule's still for November, the Joshua Pula fight over there with Eddie Hearn. But, you know, Eddie's still holding out for a crowd. He wants to make sure there's some people, whether, you know, it's half a stadium or whatever it is. He wants there to be a live audience for that showdown. That's November, and that's a long way off.
Well, you know, when you got a fighter, you know, Eddie Hearns did a tremendous job in promoting Anthony Joshua. He puts butts in the seat. You know, he packs the crowd. Yeah, Bob, it's hard to let that gate go when you're making the kind of money that that they make off of a live gate. It's hard to let that go and say, let's go straight to television because so much money gets washed down the drain. You know, different story if you don't have fighters that put butts in the seats anyway, and you're still trying to promote them to build them to a fan base. But Anthony Joshua, man, he definitely puts butts in the seats, man, and it's hard to let that go. And with this situation with the pandemic, you know, you look at it, Bob, you say, wow, man, without a crowd with Anthony Joshua, man, with all of those screaming fans that he has, man, it don't look good. It wouldn't look good. Now, I don't think it would sound the same, and I don't think that he would fight the same. But, man, oh, man, what a situation, Bob. But, you know, to get in the fan base, you know, Mike Tyson is biting at the bit again, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about he called Riddick Bowe out. He says he wants to fight Riddick Bowe. So
right.
Riddick Bowe, yeah, that would be a matchup. That fight never happened when Riddick Bowe, two former heavyweight champions of the world, both of them from Brooklyn, Bob.
Right, both of them. Bowe actually had come out earlier. Bowe actually said he wanted Holyfield. He wants another shot at Holyfield, too. So Bowe's got a couple of things to decide upon. He can fight Holyfield or Tyson. Who'd have thought that?
Yeah. And with Mike saying he wanted to, he was coming out and he showed some videos on social media of him working out. And then next thing you know, everybody wanted to come out, start coming out and start training during this time. Then, you know, Holyfield said he's coming out. And Riddick Bowe said he's coming. Then you got
Shannon Briggs was already there.
Yeah, Shannon Briggs is always screaming. So when Mike came out, you know, Shannon Briggs is coming.
Tony was
over
there.
Yeah, but, you know, you have the Klitschko. He's training. You know, so
Good.
We didn't hear anything from Lennox Lewis. You know, maybe Lennox Lewis might be the happiest guy on the block, and you know, he's saying, "Hey, look,
I don't need this.
Yeah, I don't need this. I beat most of them, so he's not saying much. So, but I don't hear. You know." I thought maybe Buster Douglas would say, I'm coming out of retirement. Once he heard Mike Tyson say he was coming out. But,
a couple of those guys. They all want their shot back in the senior circuit.
Yeah.
The old golfers going out there. Yeah, the old boxers go out.
yeah. it's really, really something with these guys coming on. They have a lot of time on their hands, and it makes them reflect on a lot of things in the past. And, you know, they start working out and thinking, and then the next thing you know, hey, I don't feel that bad. You know, and but I like to say, I like to see how the guys are once they start sparring and, you know, going through that regiment for sports, specific training for boxing. You know, we'll see how their body handles it, you know, sparring and everything and getting hit. You know, that's the main thing. That a lot of guys, when once they start getting hit again, their body starts getting sore and wore down. They say, this is why I retired.
This is why I retired in the first place.
Yeah, the mind is willing, but the body's not. You know, So it boils down to one of those things, you know, that once that body's come to them, Bob, they say, oh, man, this is why I stayed out. I stay retired, you know. So let's see how it pans out once if things ever get going the way it once was. I think it's going to be a whole lot different the way boxing is done now, you know.
Right. Right. Well, we're seeing it right now just with, you know, these shows that even the New Zealand show, we mentioned at the top there that New Zealand is coronavirus free. They're one of the first countries that had it that have totally eliminated it. They've done a good job, of course, with that. But, you know, they're still doing social distancing and masks and everything else. So that's what we're going to be seeing. Even though, you know, in a case like I said, New Zealand, zero cases, but they're still taking the proper precautions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they're taking it. But we've seen Tony again. He was on the show last week, who did a fabulous job, and he did a fabulous job doing those fights in Nevada on the top.
Right, the Thursday. Yeah, he did the heavyweight fight the other night. Yeah, Thursday night, the Takam Forrest fight, which was going to be Miller's fight. But, yeah, I saw Tony Weeks in the ring there, refereeing the fight. So, yeah, it was good seeing him after talking to him last week.
Yeah. Tony does such a great job of refereeing. You know, he understands the his job second to none, and that's what makes him good. You know,
right?
Yeah, he's a student of the game. So that
he lives in
really,
the
play. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real great because you know in history as the bubble. You know,
uh-huh.
We look back on this year.
Yeah,
the fight's at the bubble.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're pulling it off, and they're fighting on new ground because you know no one really done it before. You know, this all of this is something new, and it's a learning curve as what to do, what not to do, and how do you get it, and how do you get the people to watch and, you know, keep people interested in it. And I think it's all about the matchup. You know how it is. If the fights are matched right and people, when they tune in and they see the excitement of the fight, then they stay tuned in. But if they tune in and the fights are not up to the par, they're dull, they're not exciting, or what they do, they change and they go to somewhere else, you know. And
right, and we talked a little last week about ESPN's schedule for August. They're only doing Thursday night shows, so they're dropping the Tuesday nights at the end of the month. But a big part of that is the fact that the other sports are kicking back in now. You know, we're going to actually have baseball, plus the playoffs, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs are happening. And we're not even sure what's going to be going on with football by then, but you know, there's going to be other sports to watch on TV. So that's a big part of the reason why, you know, are you going to watch LeBron James or are you going to watch some fighter you don't know, you know?
Yeah. It's really something. It really is, you know.
Yeah,
but
unprecedented territory, as always. Yeah, every day it's a new ground.
Well, when you talk about, you know, and cancellations, it opens the, since boxing, you know, we do have something going with big football, college football, with that, we don't know how that's going to pan out, Bob.
Right.
College football, maybe boxing could fill in the gap for Saturday afternoon. That's a big gap for
people. Oh,
hell
yeah.
You know, all around the country in different markets, college football on a day like Saturday, it eats up the airways, man. You can't do nothing. Everybody's glued to the the TV screen somewhere in the country. Why, or if they're not in stadiums, Bob.
Right.
You know.
Bar bars, you know, go to the bars and things like that. Everybody gets together, you know.
Yeah, and well, you're talking about bars and crowds and stuff and stadiums. You know, Penn State, up at State College, on a Saturday afternoon becomes the third largest city in Pennsylvania, Bob,
yeah.
For
110,000 people packed into that thing. 110,000 plus. It's amazing. Yeah. It's the third largest city. And it's amazing. And, you know, just something else we were hearing towards the last week there, South Carolina, you know, getting a lot of cases now surging. And there was even talk from the governor about shutting down the sports in the fall, which you're talking about Clemson, you know, as far as the national powerhouse and everything else, you know. So if Clemson goes down for the season, you know, then that's a major impact right there. It's one of the top programs in the country.
Yeah, it really is, you know. Yeah, it really is. You know, Penn State, one thing that they do good, man, that stadium year after year, Saturday after Saturday, when it's football time, man, it's unbelievable how they get all those people in that area, in that small college town. It's just
right.
And get them out. You know, different things be going on around, but they get them in and get them out, man. It's really, really something special, Bob.
Right. You've seen, I've seen, you know, the amount of people who tailgate. I mean, you're talking about 100,000 people in the stadium, but there's still several thousand people who don't even go in, who are just hanging outside at the RVs and kicking back with a big TV. You know, so you take that, plus the people are just in the parking lot. It is amazing. But you take that away, I can't see what's going to happen, you know? I mean, there's something to play, you know, as far as TV money. But, you know, these are college kids. This is part of their life, you know? I mean, it's only a couple years they get to showcase their talents, you know? And not all of them turn pros, you know? So some of these guys that, you know, like playing football or any of these other sports now that are in jeopardy for the fall. You know, they're
right.
Kind of getting cheated out of their, you know, out of their little bit of, you know, time that they get to play.
Right. So, you know, it's really, really something special, man, really. You know, Bob, last week with, you know, was the 4th of July, Independence Day. I mean, we had a very special show on, with all of them about the film and stuff, the music sequel to the film. And Champ Place, he did a tremendous job, man, to rap like that and rap that whole of Jack Johnson. And then with John Perry, who's playing Jack Johnson, his song. You know, and Linda Haywood, who's Jack Johnson's niece, did a great job. But to talk about Jack Johnson, do you know, Bob, right after that fight, with a fight of the centuries with Jeffries, as he was coming out of the ring, Oldfield, who was a avid racing guy, Bernie Oldfield, he challenged Jack Johnson to a car race, and they raced up in Brooklyn. Jack Johnson lost, but they end up racing. Jack Johnson took the challenge on, Bob. Isn't that something?
As he's leaving the ring, he's like, "Let's go race."
It's really something special when you know he would. take challenges like that, and they turn into huge events.
Right.
You know, yeah. Yeah, so.
And don't you, on your exhibit, you have some of those, you have his gloves or something, right? The driving gloves?
We have in the exhibit, Bob, we have a pair of trunks of his, a glove, his bag gloves. We have the wrench that he invented. We have that.
The monkey. Yeah,
the monkey wrench, as they called it. And, you know, he had two patents that he had. And we take that, when we take that exhibit around, as you well know, those are the artifacts that we have in the exhibit. And plus we have the audio of him racing. You know, we have the film footage of that. And we show the film footage of it. We talk about, we show the fight when he won the title to become the first African-American heavyweight champion of the world. We show that, and we talk about it. But the exhibit is about to open up a conversation because about race during the Jim Crow era when he was heavyweight champion, there was a lot of racism going on. And Jack Johnson, you know, all the foul things that were said about him, the pictures that were drawn to him looking like a monkey and things that, and the barriers that he had to come, you know, he handled it extremely, extremely well. And he was bold and brass, and he bring people together. You know, George Little, who was white, Tex Rickert, who was promoter, he was white, and, you know, Jack Johnson got along with people of different nationalities all around the world very, very well.
Right.
Know,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
he was outgoing, to say the least.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very outgoing, and they're very, colorful. Well, we talked about it many times as far as, you know, one of the first real, celebrities of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
How to do it, yeah. Expand together.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go race. Let's go fight. Let's do this. Yeah. And, so it was definitely larger than life.
Yeah, definitely larger than life, Bob. But what made him so popular is that he traveled all around the world with his one show that he had, you know, and that was called Jack Johnson. The guy was and boy, everywhere he went, he was bold and brass. You know, when people were riding horse and buggies, he was out driving fancy cars at the time, you know, that that were out. So, yeah. And his film, Bob, those films that they cut off are in the National Archives. His fight with Burns, that's in the National Archives, and Jeffries. They wouldn't show them during that time, but they eventually went in the preservation of films. Isn't that something?
Right. That's great.
They meant so
super,
much. To be kept for all time. So, and plus, you know, like I told you, right up there in Schuylkill County, at Muhammad Ali's training camp up there in the mountains, Skull Hill, Ali used to sit up there and talk about Jack Johnson's, and many fans came to see Muhammad Ali around the world. He used to sit there and talk about what Jack Johnson meant to him. And boy, for Muhammad Ali to say he was bold and brass, you know, and a lot of stuff that Ali did, he emulated it, joked and play around. Not only did he get it from a great wrestler, but he also said he got a lot of that stuff from Jack Johnson. And plus, when he beat Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali said that he used the anchor punch that Jack Johnson talked about so much that he used to use. And Ali used to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it so much is that it just sticks in your head like it was yesterday, Bob. You know, it just rings and rings and rings, the things that he wanted to say. But it was just a part of a great history to have someone like that up in Muhammad Ali up in Schuylkill County. And then he had a piece of anthracite coal, which anthracite coal is some of the best coal in the world from the coal region up there. He put Jack Johnson on the black anthracite coal rock.
Big piece of coal, yeah.
Yeah, the anthracite coal. Yeah, up there with his name across it. So that's how much Jack Johnson meant to him, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's just, like we said, that's Ali. And you could, and he gave credit to it because Johnson was doing that long before there was TV even, too, you know, and anything else, or mass media of any kind. You know, it was just basically newspapers were how the word was being spread. Radio came along a little bit later in the 20s, but, you know, yeah, he was doing it without the media that Ali had, especially not today, too. I mean, yeah, the way we have it. But he was definitely the pioneer of a lot of things.
Oh, yeah, they used to write about everything Jack Johnson did.
Right.
Because he was that bold and brash. He did a lot of things, you know. And with him, you know, he was first married. You know, they don't know if he was married or his girlfriend was black. But then after that, after he dumped her, she scolded him in Denver, and that's when he started seeing a lot of white women that he ended up marrying and things like that. But some of them were rich, some of them were poor. But whatever it was, he was on the cutting edge of that, because that was taboo. Interracial marriages and stuff just caught during the Jim Crow era, they caught the blues. But Jack Johnson, he didn't care. He gave him the blues. He said that they never let him forget that he was black. And he said, and I never let them forget I was black. Jack Johnson. Yeah, and Jack Johnson was bold and brass about it. And to talk about Donald Trump, just a couple years ago, he gave him a pardon. And that was the Mann Act, was to take a person, this white woman, across state lines to do foul and immoral things to her, and it ended up being his wife. And that happened in Pennsylvania. You know that, Bob? Not too many people know that. They think it was in the South.
Out of Pittsburgh, yeah.
Yeah, out of Pittsburgh, going to train from Pittsburgh to Chicago, where he had paid for a ticket. And a lot of people think it was in the South, but it was in Pittsburgh, and they prosecuted him because he was on his way to Chicago, where he lived. That's where they took him to court. And he was found guilty for that Mann Act. And a year and a day, they had sentenced him. And while he was out on an appeal of the sentencing and all that, he posed as a Negro League baseball player, Bob. And
okay.
Yeah. You know, there were some baseball players out in Kansas City that he had put on film. They were filming him, and Jack Johnson put them on, you know, because baseball during that time was just coming along, and the Negro League ball players were pretty well known, you know, for their excitement that they played in the game of baseball, and their style of play was exciting, big bands and all that. So Jack Johnson had put a couple players for Kansas City Negro League on film. And when he escaped out of the country into Canada, he posed as a Negro League baseball player. So that's
right.
How that goes.
They were the Monarchs, I think. Kansas City Monarchs? Is
right,
that the
yeah,
name
that's
of
it. Kansas
yeah.
City Monarchs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're the famous team of all, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know he did the baseball thing either. See, that's exactly
yeah.
what we're saying.
Yeah.
Where's he going to pop up next? He's playing baseball. He's racing cars. Good stuff.
Yeah, and they talk about riots, Bob. The riots that he did that happened just recently those type of riots happen all around the country when he beat Burns, when Jeffries. I mean, those type of riots happen all around the country. So he bring a lot of stuff to the table, Bob. With the stuff that he did, so it's really something. Bob, you know, we wait for our guests to come to call in. So as we wait for our guests to call in, if they're calling in, so let's see here.
Yeah, it was a good show last week. That's how we got off on the Jack Johnson thing. But, yeah, we have a nice little 4th of July show. Again, that John Perry tune, I like the little part about you in there.
Yeah, he did. He threw that, he threw that in there.
He didn't get to have it. So he did. That was great stuff, though.
Yeah, it was really something about that. Let's see here. Let's see if we can try to squeeze these guys in here. Get them.
Okay. Yeah.
See if we can get them on the horn here.
We'll try
to get these guys in here on the phone. You know, it's just tough. You know, maybe you know on a call in, you know, we don't know if they forgot or whatever. But Bob, let's talk about the bouts that were with Stevenson on ESPN. You know, it looked like he's maturing. He gave up the WBO.
Yeah, he gave up his crown. Yeah, WBO featherweight title. Shakur Stevenson, he's going to be staying at super featherweight now, and he's going to vacate his WBO featherweight title. Basically, he wanted to get a big unification fight with Josh Warrington, and with the coronavirus and lockdowns and everything else, and Warrington being over in England and Stevenson being over here in Jersey. You know, we're still not doing that international travel yet. If you look at all these shows that we even talk about at the top of the show when we go around the world and you really dig deep into the names, and you'll see that they're all pretty much local, or if they're not natives, they're training there and they're living there in these cities that we're having these fights, such as like Riga, Latvia tonight, and in the Czech Republic and Germany and New Zealand. You look at these fighters and you look at their hometowns and you see they're local. So, that was a big thing. We'll see what Stevenson does. I mean, he's a young fighter, got a title already, and figures he might be better off staying up there at the bigger weight. And he looked good. The fight he did a couple weeks ago that started the whole back in the early part of June when he fought Caraballo, and you saw how well he did there. So I guess he believes he's going to be able to stay at that super featherweight and give up the title, but that's a big move for him.
Yes, it is. It's a big move stepping out up, but you know, I don't know if I would have let that title go. You know,
you go to the ad line
before you go to the drop line, and maybe he really just can't make that weight anymore. But I think I would have let it go like that. You know, you work so hard. You know, you got to go to the ad line before you go to the drop line. And that's important. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he wanted that unification fight. I can see it not coming out. But, you know, everybody's all in the same boat here, too, as far as waiting out on the virus and when we can open things fully back up. But he's comfortable where he's at. And again, you said he might not be able to make that weight.
Yeah. He might not be able to make that weight. And that's guys struggle sometimes with their weight. And, you know, it's just difficult, and they feel they won't be at their best climbing up the ladder. So they just vacate the title and just move up and, you know, fight as a former champion at that point. You know what I mean?
I talked about it last week. We said Chai Phan Lungri, the great minimum weight fighter, all-time champion, from Thailand, but, you know, again, you look at that, what I mentioned, he fought his entire career at 105 pounds. You know, that's just amazing.
Yeah, isn't that something, you know?
Yeah.
Really.
So, I mean, talk about making weight, yeah, all those years.
Right. So, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. It just becomes one of those things, moving up in weight class and stuff. A lot of guys have lost the title because of weight. They feel they just can't make that weight. And if they come down in weight, they tear too much into their muscle fiber. And by tearing into their muscle fiber like that, they're not just as strong as they would be, you know. So they just say, look, I'm vacating that title. Let me move up. Let me move on. Let me get up out of this weight class. And let me get up into the next weight class and let me go out and make a run at that title, that championship, you know. With four major title bouts and with a former Olympian, it should be he should be able to get a title shot as a former champ. And it depends who has the champions at the time, you know. And
right.
That's where it becomes difficult to work those things into it, you know. But apparently his team has measured it out and weighed it out, and they feel like that they can move a title up on that weight class.
Yeah, so I mean, time will tell, as always. But, we'll see what happens. But right now, you know, Warrington, he's the main man in the featherweight, so that's going to also affect him because people were looking forward to a possible great unification fight, wrap some of them belts up and package them as one. So, you know, we'll see where he goes from here, too, and that's part of that whole Eddie Hearn stable, too. So,
again, yeah,
we're talking
absolutely.
About the whole problem
yeah.
of having the, you know, the travel. And, you know, we're not allowed to go to the UK right now anyway, you know, as far as Stevens there or me or you or anybody, you know, there's still travel restrictions coming out of the U.S. So, you know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, coming out of U.S. and guys, boxers are all over the world and you get talent from all over the world to get them to fight on your show. You know what I mean? It's probably tough matching guys up, you know, for championship bouts is because there's a lot of fighters that are rated all over the world. You know what I
right.
mean? All over
exactly,
the world.
Yeah.
So you just have problems with that.
Yeah. You have problems because right now, as I just mentioned, that, you know, it's basically a lot of local shows. When you see these fights that we talk about that are going on, starting to pop up around the globe, and they're basically in these little clubs, and again, they're local fighters. You know, which is good because they're hometown guys and, you know, gals that people know and they've grown up with and watched these guys fight. So that's one thing. But, yeah, to get these big fights where you have, you know, a Stevenson and a Warrington, you know, trying to find a place to go fight in the world, you know, at this point in time where everything can be somewhat safe and all the protocols and everything else in line. There's a lot to deal with as far as, you know, these kind of shows. Everything can change in a matter. We just watched it happen over the last month or so as these numbers start surging again. You know, as the weather started getting hotter and people started getting out more, and next thing you know, we have a surge. And, you know, this virus is mutating, too. That's another interesting point that, you know, it's a virus. It wants to survive. And if you go back to 2003 and the SARS virus, the first bat of the coronaviruses, it was actually the fifth one, which is the
right.
seventh. But those, what happened there was that basically the virus killed itself by going into, you know, going into these bodies and dying there. And so this one's, that's where a lot of this talk was with the kids and the younger people and all that, and they may not be getting as sick, but the virus is living in them still. And that's the thing. It's mutating and it's realizing, well, maybe I shouldn't kill the person I'm living here in, you know, being a parasite in. Maybe I could live longer if I don't kill the guy, you know? But, I mean, all seriousness, though, it's an interesting thing to see this virus, which how it's changing. It's been around since December. We're talking like 8 months now, you know,
yeah.
When it first broke loose, and it's adapting. That's the scary part.
And,
I mean, it's not as fatal, maybe, you know, as I'm saying, but we're going to have it.
Don't let us not forget that Anthony Joshua, the heavyweight champion of the world, he had to self-quarantine himself. A friend of his
right.
got sick with it. He was with some of the...
Prince Charles had it, yeah.
Yeah, Prince Charles had it, and he had to self-quarantine himself. So, you know, it's affecting people that are in the game of boxing, you know.
with we had some people pass, like Eddie Cotton, who we had on our show. He contracted the virus and he passed. And our prayers and stuff go out for him. But it shows you how it affects everybody. It don't matter race, creed, color, religion, fat, tall, skinny, thin, you know, overweight, underweight. It doesn't matter. Healthy, sick. I mean, this thing is really, really deadly. And, you know, it's affecting people in the game, in the sport of boxing, you know. But, and, you know, we had Larry Hazard, who is the commissioner of New Jersey, boxing commissioner. He was on, and we asked him, what do you think, and when are you playing, or what's going to open up? He said he's going with the medical people. He said, hey, you know, when they say it's safe and things for boxing to resume in the state of New Jersey, he said it, we'll go on and we'll make it happen. You know, he said, but until then, he said it right. Is what it is, you know, and wow, what a great job that he did, you know, talking about it, and the state of New Jersey sticking to their guns, you know. I know people are going to the shore and all of those things like that, but the casino life in AC is, that's being heavily affected. They say gaming revenue online's up, Bob, but
right.
Online gaming, but, you know, those casinos, they're going to be suffer a little bit, I think, and they are.
I think it's prime time for them, too, prime season, you know, summer, and we're used to seeing, you know, boxing matches. We saw the last couple of years some new casinos popping up. With the Hard Rock, you know, Lomachenko fought there to kick things off. Of course, we saw Shields and Hammer last April, you know, at the Boardwalk Center, the classic convention hall, the beautiful building there, and then all the other the venues. You know, we were talking about that even with the Atlantic City Hall of Fame that has been postponed. We haven't heard from Ray McClain if he's canceled yet, but he's still waiting, I guess, to see if he can do something later on in the fall. But, you know, they had a big fight planned, and there's, you know, Holyfield's son, I think, Evan, was going to be on that card. So there's a lot of things that, you know, well, you know, Atlantic City's famous for their boxing venues, and it's just strange not to hear any fights coming out of the town right now.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, and not only the revenue stream, you know, entertainment, man. One thing about the shore for the summer, man, you know, to go down to the beaches in AC and walk around, you know, get the good old subs and, you know, browse the beach, get the suntan, go to the spas and things like that. And, you know, it's a different change of life. Now you have to find other places to do something, but the thing, the crowd, you have to be very careful about being around the crowd, and that's heartbreaking, Bob, you know. And plus, people like to go out and have a few beers and stuff like that when they go out, and they got to watch the crowd, that social distancing, you know, Bob. And the mask makes it hard to go out, have a mask on, and drink a brew or something. and with Pottsville,
yeah,
to say, you know, with Pottsville, you know, with the oldest brewery in America, Yingling Beer, being there, and they pump out a lot of brew, you know, I wonder how it has. This has affected them. You know, that would be interesting to find out, you know, because it's difficult for people to go out and have a mask on and sip on a brew.
Right. And I know Yingling was affected. I know a lot of people that do work there. One of the big things they were talking about were the kegs, you know, because bars were closed. And, you know, not everybody has the tap system in their house. You know? So basically, yeah, the kegs were the big problem. You know, they were still moving as far as bottles and you know, personal stuff. But yeah, the bigger like kegs just weren't moving. That's where they were feeling the pinch, because the bars weren't open, so nobody was drinking the kegs, the tap beer.
Yeah, their manufacturing it gets backed up. It slows down the production line. You know, Yingling's beer, you know, Schuylkill County consumes a lot of brewski. Yeah, Schuylkill County consumes a lot of brewski, but you know, beer is it does well with boxing bombs. Beer does.
Oh yeah.
You know? From the Budweiser, Miller Lite fights, you know, it's done very well for the sport, and the Mexican beer, Corona, and
Tequilas,
yeah. It does well for sponsorship. I mean, they're really getting it out there, and people love going to a fight that's pouring the brews.
We talked about the pay-per-views, you know, and as far as people getting together, you know, at somebody's house and bringing the beer as well, you know, and the food, and everybody sits down and chips in for the pay-per-view, too, is another big part, which is kind of not happening, too, because people aren't getting together, you know. So we haven't had really the pay-per-view shows, but it'll be interesting to see what when we get our first big pay-per-view fight, to see what kind of numbers we get when that comes back around. And we'll see what the price point is, too, because, you know, I think we have to drop it from $80. We've been saying that, you know, for a while now. And it was starting to get a little bit too saturated. Last summer we were saying, man, there's another pay-per-view show. We just had one 2 weeks ago. You know, so there was a lot of money to be pumped out. So we'll see what kind of restructure happens, you know, down the road here when we get back. Maybe if we go back down there $50 or $60 or something like that, you know, $49.99 to get things rolling again.
Yeah, I think it's going to come way down because the economics and people, there's a lot of people laid off, and even people are getting, you know, these stimulus checks and unemployment checks. They just don't have the extra cash flow to be dishing out. So that's going to be another thing that they're going to have to look at, the mediums for people's expenditure in their pocket to pay for shows. So, you know, with these numbers with ESPN doing free television, it's going to tell a lot about pay-per-view. And don't forget, Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, you know, that heavy WBC heavyweight trilogy is still on. So, you know, I think they got over the glove issue. You know, Deontay Wilder's finally looking, you know, hey, look, he better start looking at how to stop getting hit with knuckle sandwiches and stop eating them. You know, like I said before, that's the answer to his problem that he has, Bob, is that he has to find a way in his repertoire to train and to neutralize the punches that he got hit with. And to every punch, there is a counter. And that's what great trainers are able to do. You have to make the adjustment. You got to find out what the guy was doing to you and how you counter it to stop it. You know, you got to counter the attack. That's the name of that game.
Well, Fury came out and attacked. We all saw that. That was like, boom, you know. There was no, you know, no messing around, no playing around that first round. Fury came out and went right to him. And that thing might have, we said that before, might have actually caught by surprise a little bit there, I think.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, it was like, hey, we're on. You know?
Yeah.
And Fury kept the pace up, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Tyson Fury, to all his credit, you know, he really did something to Wilder. When that first fight, when he got up off the deck, Bob, after it looked like he was knocked dead.
He was being starved. Yeah, he was definitely.
You know, for him to come back like that, I think it just shows the character of Tyson Fury. And for Anthony Joshua, we didn't think he could come back from being stopped. He'd come back, he adjusted his skills, he went back to the drawing board, he worked on how to neutralize the things that he got hit with, and then he didn't get hit with it the next time. That all of us thought that he'd go in the same fight the same way and make the same mistake, but he didn't, to Anthony Joshua. And that's what boxing is about. Can you make the adjustments of what a guy's doing to you? And if you train and you work on the counter punches, you work on how to neutralize the attack that the guy is, you can win. And Anthony Joshua is a prime example of that. He got beat, but he came back to the drawing board, and boy, If Wilder wants to do it, he got to stop complaining and go back to the drawing board. But, Bob, with 10 seconds, and we want to apologize that our guests didn't call up and call in and show out. But maybe there was a problem. We don't know. But
well, we got to cover some things. Well, stick around. So we covered some territory anyway. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
well, yeah.
We like to thank people for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. As we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. My name is Aaron Snowell, and our person that takes us on the magic carpet ride around the world, Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Hascop, who's out for the summer with his grandson. Man, he's swinging away, Bob. He's a home run hitter, and I hope that guy's hitting the home run.
There we go. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Right, we'll talk to everybody next week. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.